At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
Okay, everybody, welcome to the podcast. Gideon, how's it going this week, man?
It's going good, man. Man, I've been watching a lot of great movies. Watched 1917 for this. Watched Alien Romulus last night. Really liked that. And watched The Boy and the Heron. And I rewatched the original 1977 Star Wars, which I guess is
Oh,
a
sick.
special edition with all the horrible CGI dog shit in it.
Was the scene with Jabba in there?
Not that one. No. But there was still plenty of really bad CGI. I haven't seen it since I was like a kid, like the original trilogy really, like at all. So it was just
Hold up, right?
it was awesome watching it, but those CGI moments were so glaring. It was so bizarre that that's like the official thing on Disney Plus.
I'll link you to a couple years ago for my birthday. Grace got me what are called it's an illegal website called like Grindhouse Cinema or whatever, and they sell bootleg Blu-rays of the original trilogy without any of these special effects added to them, and then they've added like all this film grain and like audio popping, so it's like as you would have seen it in the theater in 1977.
Dude, hell yeah.
It's really badass. It's called the Grindhouse Cut. I'll link you to it. They're
Yeah, please
pretty
do.
cool.
I would love that.
And okay, so that's cool. Anything else?
I don't know if I mentioned, but Alyssa beat Red Dead 2 recently.
Mm-hmm.
Like the whole
That's
game,
right.
that log and everything.
Okay, awesome.
And I'm almost done with Elden Ring. I'm getting pretty close.
Yep.
I
From
know I've been
everything you
saying
told me,
that.
it sounds like you're getting pretty close. Well, it's a big game, you know. It's like
Yeah,
a
yeah.
over 100-hour investment to get through that.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's good. Neil, let's transition to you. One of my favorite movie opinions of yours is that you like A New Hope more than Empire Strikes Back, which I feel like I almost never hear people say. So, why don't you tell me what you've been up to this week and then defend your categorically untrue statement about Star Wars. No, I'm just kidding. I like A New Hope a lot.
So let's see. I turned 32 yesterday.
Nice.
Happy birthday.
Happy birthday, bud.
Thank you, but it's still depressing.
It's better than the alternative, right? Which is being dead.
Arguably. Let's see. Still struggling with my desktop. Hopefully I'll have that resolved tomorrow.
Nice.
Inshallah.
What are you gonna do? Not be n yeah, what are you gonna do? Not have your desktop ready in time for Space Marine 2?
That's a good qu that's a
I don't think the Emperor would approve of such flimsy excuse making.
you know, you're not wrong. So without really the ability to game much, been watching a lot of Better Call Saul, which I had started in the past and just never
Never finished it up.
never finished it up. So I think I'm in the fifth season now. I think it's five of six.
Nice. I haven't seen the last season, but I've seen the rest of it and loved it.
So why do you not like? Well, not that you don't like it. Why is New Hope your favorite Star Wars movie?
I think it kind of comes down to the idea that it just establishes this universe so well.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think it's just like so well done. Tell me, like, there's nothing that's like, it's not that there's anything wrong with Empire Strikes Back. It's just more that the Empire Strikes Back doesn't, I don't think it works as a standalone movie. It requires some iteration of A New Hope. Like whether or not New Hope was good and then they made like a better sequel, or they made a really good movie, which I think they did. It just doesn't stand on its own. And I think in whatever sort of internal logic I'm using here, I just think that because New Hope stands on its own, it's just like that slightly bit better.
Yeah, I somewhat agree with that, right? Like, I think my favorite scene in A New Hope actually is the medal ceremony at the end, because there's no dialogue and it's just the awesome music. Like, I don't know why I always tear up and get like really emotional during that scene. It's just like so triumphant, and you feel like it's just such a great happy ending for all these characters. And as immortalized in Clerks, Empire ends on such a downer, right? And that's what's nice about it. But go ahead.
I don't mind that Empire ends on a downer. It's just that it, like, if you were just like thrown into Hoth, and like, you know, you see weird tauntauns and Han busting out the blue lightsaber to cut the tauntaun open and stuffing Luke inside, like, it just requires a lot of context that it can't supply on its own.
Yeah,
that's kind of enough for me.
Yeah, I suppose. Well, we'll have to talk about my favorite Star Wars movie another time, which is The Last Jedi. But now we're going to talk about 1917. No, I was just trying to get... don't worry, I don't actually feel that way. I was just trying to get a rise out of Neil.
I was wondering. I was like, damn.
You're like, what the fuck? I'm not going on this podcast anymore.
Bring that next up.
It's been The Last Jedi, but... that's probably my worst theater going experience of any movie ever.
Damn. Okay.
Yeah, I mean not to get on a anti Last Jedi tirade here, because I don't want to be like every YouTube channel that's ever existed, but yeah, at no point during a Star Wars movie in the theater should I ever look at my watch and be like, can we be done with this? And then there's still like 40 minutes left. Like, I was so ready to be done with that movie. It was, and like every 10 minutes I was turning to the guy next to me, because like when you're watching a new Star Wars movie and it hasn't been spoiled for you and you're in the theater, it's like opening weekend, it's like the canon is being written in front of you. It's like nothing you're seeing on screen is ever going to be undone. So like when Leia flew back into the starship, man, after like being blown out of the airlock like Superman, I was just watching it in disbelief. Like, I can't believe this is part of the canon now. Like, I have to sit here. Like, this is real Star Wars.
Go ahead. Sorry.
It's like that scene, according to the canon, is just as important as anything that happens in Empire Strikes Back. I mean, that's literally what they're telling you, right? When they put the Star Wars stamp on the beginning of the movie, they go, okay, this is how it happened. And now I'm just like, yeah, okay.
Mm-hmm. Man. Yeah, I got really excited when I first watched that scene. I was like, are they actually going to kill her off this way? And then when she started like flying through space, I was like, oh god, it's even worse than I thought. Like,
yeah. I think there's like a lot of redeeming qualities of that movie, and I'm totally okay with a lot of the, like, I know people joke about the subverting expectations and things like that. And I'm okay with them doing something new and different mm-hmm. with Star Wars. And like, I'm okay with Snoke not being the ultimate bad guy or not having this cool identity. Or, you know, there's like lots of stuff I'm totally okay with. But like, I just didn't enjoy myself in the movie theater. Mm-hmm. I just didn't think it was very good. Anyway.
Okay, yeah, I need to rewatch it, but yeah, I get what you mean.
Yeah. So we are here to talk about 1917. I specifically picked this movie because I saw it in the theater upon release, and it was totally awesome. I feel that Sam Mendes is somewhat of a underappreciated director. Now, it's hard to say that in a world where his debut movie was American Beauty, and he won the Academy Award for Best Picture on his debut movie. So underappreciated is maybe not the right word, but when you talk about like modern directors who are like the, you know, the best modern directors, I feel like Sam Mendes never comes up, and I feel like his filmography is actually quite good. He also directed Skyfall.
And Spectre, apparently.
Yeah, and Spectre. I'm going to look at the rest of his filmography here real quick, but I also brought this movie because I thought that Neil would really enjoy it. So let's get it right out of the way at the beginning. We're going to bury the lead. Neil, did you enjoy this movie?
Yes, I enjoyed 1917.
Okay, excellent. Now we'll get more we'll get more into that. So let me just give a brief synopsis. So it basically is set during the First World War. Two British soldiers are told, hey, one of our other platoons is going to carry out this attack in X number of hours, like 24 or 48 hours, whatever. We need you and another scout to get over there and tell them to call off the attack because we think the Germans are like going to set up an attack. Like they think that they have them on the run, but they actually don't. And they're going to like walk into a massacre. So you guys need to get over there and tell them to stop before they all kill themselves, basically. So it's a super interesting but simple premise. The other thing I think that you would be remiss not to mention about this movie is that the cinematographer is Roger Deakins, the legendary nominated for 14 Academy Awards and never won one until he won for Blade Runner, and then he also won for this. So the movie is done all in one take. I say that kind of in quotation marks because there's clearly a few parts where they hide the fact that they cut away. But yeah, it's basically kind of a simple war movie just told in a pretty spectacular way. So I had seen it before. Neil had obviously not seen it before. Gideon, you'd seen this movie quite a few times, right?
Mm-hmm. I think I'd seen it maybe 3 or 4 times before this. I saw it in theaters. It was one of the first like 4K Blu-rays we had. So watch that pretty early on into getting into that hobby. And I might have even seen it like twice in theaters. I don't totally remember, but yeah, I've seen it a few times and like it quite a bit.
Excellent. And Neil, I know you hadn't seen it, but what did you know about this movie going into it?
So yeah, I'd heard that it was a faux one take. Knowing what I know about history, I knew that it wasn't about the end of the war because it's not 1918.
Right.
So it wasn't going to be like the last battle, so to speak, of World War One. Really that was about all I knew. Like I'd seen, you know, like previews for the movie on YouTube or whatever, but yeah, just typically not a lot. I remember seeing that Ben Friedrich Cumbersnatch was in there for some amount of time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's right.
But otherwise, like the leads are relatively like young up and coming actors. I did hear like I listened to a lot of folk music on Spotify and stuff, and so like a cleaned up version of the guy singing Poor Wayfaring Stranger towards the end came up, but more or less went in, I went in relatively blind.
Okay. Well, that's awesome. So let's kind of get a brief overview from everybody. I mean, I'll say up front, I think this is a great movie. I think a lot of what is great about it is on a technical level, and that's totally okay. I'm okay with saying that, hey, this movie isn't necessarily that interesting from like a plot or a character's perspective, but it's maybe one of the most beautiful looking movies I've ever seen in my life. Not just the whole one take business, but the colorization is beautiful. Cinematography is gorgeous. It's a great sounding movie. Seeing this in the theater, seeing the scene where they're down in the German tunnels and the rat like goes into the tripwire and blows the whole tunnel up like in the theater was totally awesome. I will say rewatching it on Netflix really gave me a sense of how bad Netflix compression can be, because every time the movie would get into a dark scene, you could just see the compression artifacts clear as day. It just was completely barbaric. I wish I had this on 4K Blu-ray.
It is crazy on 4K Blu-ray.
Yeah, I would imagine this is like one of the most beautiful movie ever. On
very nice.
Sounds great. And there are powerful scenes and powerful performances and things. I think it's a great story, told excellently with a lot of great technical achievement behind it. I don't think it hits like the very pinnacle of movie making for me, but it's certainly like one of my favorite war movies. I can't imagine anybody I wouldn't recommend this movie to, although I wouldn't put it up there with like my favorites of all time, basically. So Gideon, how do you feel on a broad level?
Yeah. So, I'm honestly not super familiar with a lot of different war movies. There's plenty I've missed. I still haven't seen like Saving Private Ryan. Obviously I've seen clips, Black Hawk Down, different things like that. The Hurt Locker. But I still think that this is like a modern classic, in my opinion. It's a very simple and effective story that I feel like you just get right into that world and the characters like within 5 minutes. I don't think it's like ever boring or not engaging. I think all the performances are incredible, and there's a lot of like show don't tell with just like how their faces are reacting to everything that's happening. Yeah, and it's technically super impressive and incredibly well shot and well lit. It's just firing on all cylinders in a lot of ways. And even though it does have the, you know, pseudo one take, which I love, I think is just really cool and really effective how they did it. I don't really think, you know, and none of it feels like gimmicky or anything like that. It just feels right for how they did the storytelling, and just how everything was kind of composed. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I kind of agree with that. Like the you know, initially like the one shot thing kind of seemed like a gimmick to me. Like, you know, the 2018 God of War game being like all one shot is like so often touted as like such a big thing in that game, but I think it's kind of a gimmick. It's like, there's no reason it needed to be like that. And there's actually probably like a detriment to having a game where you can't cut away to show other things. And I'm like, I love that game, but a whole one shot thing felt like a gimmick. To me, it does not feel like a gimmick in this. I think it really makes the journey feel like this one big continuous, not epic. How many miles was it? Did they ever say how far?
9 miles.
He traveled 9 miles. Okay.
Yeah, I wasn't sure.
So yeah, Neil, let's go to you. Give us your overall kind of thoughts and impressions.
Yeah, I think visually it's beautiful. Like the lighting is done really well. I don't know what like the soil of France was like at the time, or if there was some like system to how the British built their trenches, but like it's a weird thing to comment on, but like I feel like they did a really good job of like contrasting colors in what could have otherwise been like a very bland, you know, muddy movie. Like, and so one thing was like there's the trenches, and like they're, you know, they're down in the mud, but at certain points there was like this like demarcation line of like white stone pebbles that was just before the grass, like as you're going over the top in a lot of scenes. And I don't know, for some reason that really just stood out to me. I think a lot of work went into the sound, like everything sounded crisp, and like it was a well-constructed movie from the beginning. Very small cast overall, like there's a lot of body screen at certain points, but you know, it's basically the two leads and then sort of like this rotating like cameo cast of like Game of Thrones alums and like established British actors. There's Mark Strong,
Benedict Cumberbatch,
Colin Firth.
Yep, that's right.
I always think I'm getting his name wrong. Just a very small cast overall, which was, I think, good. I think it, you know, not letting it get muddled was probably a good idea.
You know, I think one of the one of my favorite things about this movie is that there's a lot of scenes where you don't know somebody's name, like right after. Well, spoiler alert: one of the guys doesn't make it. Right after that guy doesn't make it and he dies, our now new lead protagonist jumps on a bus with a bunch of other random soldiers that are kind of going in the direction he is, and you feel this instant camaraderie between him and the rest of the soldiers. And I don't know, there's just this feeling of like we're all in this together kind of deal between all the different troops and all the different soldiers. And, you know, maybe I can't relate to it because, you know, obviously I don't have any military experience, and I'm certainly not English and, you know, living in 1917 or whatever. But if, you know, if I was like English and watching this movie, Sam Mendes is the movie is dedicated to his grandfather, great grandfather, who fought in the First World War. And this movie would like make me feel incredibly proud to be English or British, or to have fought on that side of the war. It's sort of like the same way I feel about Dunkirk, which is like I feel like the movie would have had such a strong impact on me if it was like a point of national pride for me. But you know, of course it isn't. But yeah, I think a lot of to your point, it's a small cast, but the supporting cast really makes things feel like this. There's a sense of brotherhood throughout it that, you know, it's a nice feeling.
Yeah, well said. I just want to mention, so I also, since I'd seen it a few times, I opted to watch this with the director's commentary. And he had talked about that a lot, like kind of the humanity of the film and almost like the hope and what they're kind of actually fighting for. And you see that with, you know, he tries to give the German pilot that crashes water, and he ends up getting killed. And you know, the people he gets on the truck with are kind of annoyed with him at first, but then he says, you know, there were two of us, you know, and they all get it. They all understand what that's like. And it really does a great job showcasing the humanity. And it's, I don't know, it's just a really, really cool film from that kind of introspective personal level, I guess. And how, you know, you see this big scale and scope of the no man's land and explosions and stuff like that, but then you also get very intimate stuff like when he snags his hand on the barbed wire, or like the milk that he kept with him from that farm, and then it helped the baby.
That milk must have been nasty. That's all I was thinking about when I was like, don't drink that.
Yeah, probably warm by then too.
Yeah, gross. Okay, what else do we want to kind of cover regarding this movie? So, Neil, were you surprised when the lead character got shanked, and then we were left alone with Mr. 10,000 Yard Stare?
you know, I knew something was going to happen, or at least I suspected something was going to happen to him. Just because the YouTube promos or ads or whatever, they feature the point where Corporal Schofield goes over the top and he's like sprinting towards the camera as other guys are going over the top. And so just from that bit of context, I was like, oh, you know, this other guy's just not going to make it.
Yeah.
Damn.
At the very least, he's going to get, like, you know, shot in the leg and he can't go on and have to be left behind. Like,
mm-hmm.
I'm sorry. No way that he's, like, there at the end.
Right.
You know, that was, like, I think one of my favorite little supporting characters was the slightly older than them, but still young kid who, like, gives them the flare guns. The kind of, like, cynical, bitter, slight seniority guy to them. I wouldn't know how to describe him, but that was a great character. I felt like as soon as the guy was like, oh no, go get him water, and then they separated the two and then the camera wasn't pointing at the kid anymore, I was like, that kid's not gonna make it. Like as soon as he was out of sight, I was like, this is gonna be bad news bears. Yeah. Okay, so a few scenes that stick out of my mind that I want to get everybody's impression of. The scene where it's nighttime and he's running through the bombed out city and the flares are going off. Got to be one of the most spectacular scenes ever from a lighting and visual effects perspective. I mean, wouldn't you guys agree with that?
Yeah, they're very just impressive and scary, and you don't know what's around every corner, and the way the shadows are cast, the way the buildings are so completely blown out that you can't hardly tell what they were. Mm-hmm. Really, really powerful imagery.
Yeah, how about you, Neil?
Yeah, no, I when he like woke up from almost having his head blown off and like the city's on fire around him, I was like, okay, now we're getting to it.
Mm-hmm.
This is where the movie
this is where the fun begins. And what was your how erect were you when he got to the camp of other soldiers and there was the one guy singing the song to all the standbys?
That was, as they say, pretty good.
Pretty good. Okay. Yeah. That's kind of, that was the one scene in this movie, Neil, where I was like, oh yeah, Neil's going to like this movie. I can't really qualify that or explain it, but, when I was like, oh yeah, a bunch of you know, like comrades stand around, like about to go off to war for the cause. I mean, I know that they're English, so that's probably a knock against it for you, but, then, and then some guy standing like singing this old folk ballad, I was like, oh yeah, Neil's kind of like this movie. I mean, geez. And then, I mean, we can't forget everybody's favorite scene in the movie, which is the very end where he goes over the wall. Right. I mean, just the greatest shit ever. I mean, it's in every trailer for this movie, I mm-hmm. think. So they kind of like give away the farm a little bit. But mm-hmm. When he has to get past all the guys and he just goes up over the wall and he's sprinting and there's like thousands of troops like running around the battlefield and everybody's getting blown up. Holy shit.
So awesome.
You guys all pretty much like that scene.
Yeah, I love that, dude. And yeah. Like him falling over and hitting those two guys, like the director said, like if you fall down, just keep going. Like
mm-hmm.
really cool to see happen. And uh-huh. you know, it's, I think he said there was like 500 extras, like in outfits in that scene. Just mm-hmm. crazy. Really, really yeah. cool.
Beautiful uniforms and costuming in this movie as well.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I wonder how much of it is original. Because something I've been looking into a little bit is there's a watch company called Omega, right? I mean, it's a really expensive watch company. They're like, it's like the James Bond watch. Like if you want one, it's like the British version of a Rolex, right? Omega was the supplier for watches to British military in World War I and World War II. And you can actually, because they were issued, you can get them on eBay. You know, they're pretty readily available. They're expensive, but they're not as expensive as you might imagine. I mean, you would think that an antique watch like that would be, you know, $10,000 or something like that if it was still in good working condition. But you can get like a real RAF issued military watch for like $2,000 or something like that, which, like, I'm not saying this is cheap by any means, but that seems quite reasonable compared to, you know, what it could be. You wonder if they went back and they got some of the old costumes and the old uniforms, and they sourced it from, like, not museums maybe, but I thought the costume design, and again, on a technical level, this movie does pretty much everything right. Is there anything we don't like about this movie? I feel like we're just heaping gobs and gobs of praise on it, and we don't have anything negative to say about it.
Oh boy, here we go.
Okay.
Yeah, go ahead, Neil.
So, I don't know that I actually like the one take style.
Mm-hmm.
Honestly, like, it kind of felt like I was sitting back at the Searly house, watching Sam play through like a part, like the one of the parts of an Uncharted game where, like, it should have been a cutscene, but instead it's just gonna be you pressing the forward stick and Nathan Drake is like shoving his way through a crowd and like bouncing off mm-hmm. of wall, and he's talking with somebody, and like you're not actually in control, you're just pressing the forward stick, and that was all I could think of as it was happening.
Yeah, that's interesting. I do think there is a lot. This is going to be a really weird comparison, but this movie reminded me in a very weird way to Escape from New York, in that Escape from New York, I feel like, is 70% comprised of nothing happening, but you're watching Kurt Russell walk through a derelict area, just looking around and looking like at how much everything has been blown up. And the reason I think this movie is a 4 and not a 5 for me, not to give away the farm, but is that there's just too much time spent where the lead character is just like walking and not doing anything. And to your point, I think that's probably exacerbated by the, because if they were like doing different shots during that time, it would at least visually cut up those scenes a little bit. So I could see that being a little bit of a detriment. And I think the one take thing is helpful in some aspects and is not helpful in other aspects. What about you, Gideon?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if I have any minor or major like issues with this movie. I do like the one take style. I think one example that I feel like really did it for me was when they first kind of get into no man's land and there's like two massive craters on either side of them. And it goes into like a very close up of their feet, like slipping on the mud, almost like falling into either crater. And then it kind of zooms out and follows them as they, I think, kind of go into one, and it's like showing across the water. So I think they were able to be pretty diverse and just tell a lot of cool visual storytelling with the way they were doing the camera. And for the story, for me, I liked how I like it when you get to sit with a character and when they experience something crazy. Kind of like, you know, for example, there's a scene in, I won't spoil, but in Hereditary, where you really sit with a character after something crazy.
Yeah.
And so I always kind of appreciate that type of thing. Yeah, I don't know if I really have any major complaints that I can think of. I also feel like my, you know, it's like, I want to give this a 5. I probably will, but it also could be a 4. I feel like it kind of depends on the day for me mm-hmm. for watching it. You know what I mean? Even though I don't have any major or minor issues.
Yeah, I feel you. I almost feel like it's too, for me, I feel like it's too safe to give it a 5. You know, like for me, a 5 has to like jump a chasm and hit the landing. Right, it has to do something incredibly risky or incredibly weird, and then just totally pull it off like you didn't think they were going to. Mm-hmm. I don't really see that here. Like, the whole one take thing is like, whatever, you know, in a world where you can do anything with CGI, it's, you know, if you had done like one take, you know, a 2-hour movie that was one take in 1954 when there was no such thing as CGI, I'd be like, okay, that's pretty impressive, right? But, mm-hmm. You know, or even one takes like the hospital scene from Hard Boiled, which we watched, were incredibly impressive. I don't really know how impressed I am with the one take thing here, because it's hard to tell how much of it was like fake and how much of it was actually real. Yeah. Neil, I feel like you're holding back. What other crap do you not like about this movie?
I don't know that there was much that I disliked. I want to say, like, the fact that they could pull off that effect, like whether it was real or not, I still think it was like cool, just like from an editing point of view. That mm-hmm. the you know, I've disagreed with you in the past about liking Dunkirk. I do like it. Mm-hmm. But I think this movie kind of had the Dunkirk effect for me, where for whatever reason it didn't affect me the same way. Because I don't have that like same connection to World War One or the British in this case.
Mm. Yeah, awesome. So I think that makes sense.
Yeah.
So I think we're running out of things to say, and I don't want to like make the podcast go longer than it needs to, just because we need to make it go a certain time. So are you guys ready to give stars and get out of here?
I got a couple of small things I could mention.
Yeah, sure.
I guess one minor gripe I did think about is it feels a little convenient how he just kind of literally washes up next to where he needs to be, and finds them. But it was cool. It was poetic and stuff with like the flowers and stuff, and him getting back there. One thing that was cool with the commentary is some of the things that happen in stories that you hear in the movie. Like, I think Blake talks about like a rat eating somebody's ear off. They said that was like a first account story that somebody heard from like survivors mm-hmm. of World War One. The photograph of his wife and kids at the end are actual authentic photographs that got cleared for use in the movie, and they said they just looked like they would be his family. So that was really interesting. I feel like there was one more, but I forgot about it. That's okay. But yeah, I just want to mention some of those really cool little fun facts.
One other thing that I felt just like didn't come through was Mark Strong warns Schofield to like have witnesses when he delivers his message. And so I was thinking two things. One was like, oh, when he fell in the river, his letter from the general is going to be ruined. But when he gets it to Benedict Cumberbatch, it's totally crisp, totally legible.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there wasn't a reason to trust him on that. I thought it was going to be like, you know, basically the word of like, I think Lance Corporal is like next to the bottom as far as rank goes in the army. So it's going to be like, you know, the word of the lowest ranking guy in the army to the word of a colonel. And like, but you know, like he just had to yell enough and it was sufficient, right? I guess that's kind of the big one to me. It's just that, like, I thought there were a couple of things that just like didn't come through, in my opinion. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yeah, fair enough.
It was kind of like a shouting match with them.
Yeah, like there were things that like felt like they were foreshadowed and just didn't happen.
Mm-hmm. That's fair.
You know, I had not considered that, but I think I agree that that bit of the ending seems a little weak is maybe the wrong word, but I don't know. It certainly seems like a little convenient that, of course, at the last minute, he's able to convince the guy and blah, blah, right. blah, blah, blah. Yeah, so I could kind of see that. Well,
one thought that I bring up with you.
Yeah.
So there's a scene where he's like infiltrating. Okay, actually, no, sorry. Two thoughts.
Mm-hmm.
One is I never quite understood why the two guys had to cross no man's land and go through German territory to reach another British position. Like, why is that the fastest way to get this message across?
I think it's that the Germans had retreated from that first thing where they go and they find the trenches with like the rats and the tunnels that collapse. It's like the Germans were living there, and the whole reason they are going to go over the wall, like the whole reason that other battalion is like gonna go ape shit is because they think they have the Germans on the run. Right. Yeah, so the Germans clearly backed off from that first encampment and retreated to like this other encampment showing weakness or showing fear or whatever. So they're going to charge them. And then they're just like, nah, JK fam, we've got howitzers and tanks and shit.
Yeah. I mean, I understood that there was something of a gap. I just didn't think it was a big enough gap to justify, like, we're the nearest position, we're 9 miles away, kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
I think the movie might have benefited from letting me see a map. Or I would have.
Yeah. And that might just take away from the whole. Sorry, I'm yawning all of a sudden for some reason. That might have taken away from the whole one shot thing, but yeah, maybe a map would have been nice at some point, or a cutaway to, you know, Galadriel being like, and the nine races were, the rings were given to the race of men, and you know, some fucking, you know, Stephen Fry giving a narration over a map screen. Mm-hmm. Something English like that. All right. Anyway, so I'm ready to go into stars if you guys are ready to go into stars. I already spoiled it earlier. I'm giving this movie a 4 out of 5. I don't think it's like, I don't really think there's that much wrong with it, but I don't bleed for this movie like I normally have to bleed for a 5. I was actually kind of, I thought it was funny how similar it was in some ways to Bone Tomahawk, right? It was just like, it, in terms of the plot, right? It was just like, go here, do this thing.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And it's like very simplistic in that way. I think Bone Tomahawk is a much better movie than this, obviously, but I would say that this is definitely like a 4. And if I was in the right theater at the right time, I might give it a 5, but certainly this last time through, I would settle on giving it a 4. How about you guys?
I can go next. Yeah, I think I will. I will give this a 5. I don't know. It feels in a way like a perfect movie in the sense that it's very rewatchable, it's easy to recommend, it's well done, it's well acted, it looks great, it sounds great, it's not like overly long, you know, it's like right at 2 hours. I feel like it gets a bit of extra points because it's a World War One movie, and I feel like especially, I don't know, in the last, what, 10, 20 years, we maybe haven't seen as much of those. I know there's a shit ton of World War II stuff out there. Yeah. I don't know. I just think it's really well done. I have noticed for myself, I guess sometimes when I really like something, I'll just kind of, it can be an easy 5 or automatic 5. And I guess I don't want to limit how many favorites I can have. And also I've noticed that I feel like I give maybe extra points to movies that I think are more rewatchable. There's some kind of a pull for me with that. So don't know. Really like this movie. Glad we got to check it out. And yeah, I'd probably recommend it to anybody.
Okay, the moment of truth. Let's hear it now.
Yeah, for me, I think I'm gonna have to give it like a strong 3.
Don't hurt me like that. Damn it, I missed by so far.
Damn.
Yeah. Basically, a lot of things that Git is saying is like positives. I'm kind of like putting it as like almost negatives. Like, it's rewatch to me. It's like rewatchable in like almost not exactly, but almost as like a movie that you put on in the background of a party.
Wow.
Like, it just didn't grab me enough to be a 4. Like, it's well put together. Like, there's nothing super wrong with it. There's a couple of nitpicks that we brought up, but it also just like doesn't speak to me. Like, I think like Sam said, you know, in the right theater, right group of people or something, maybe I'd give it a 4. But I don't feel like it's super memorable. Like, there are scenes that are good, but there's nothing out there that's just gonna that like makes me wanna jump out and like immediately rewatch that scene. Like, I'm gonna look up that scene on YouTube just because that particular scene is so good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, fair enough. I think I understand. Which, yeah, I think it's a very even movie, but I somewhat agree with you that I don't think it has like incredible high points, except for going over the wall at the end, which is totally badass.
The rat scene. You gotta shout out the rat
scene. The rat scene's pretty good, and the where the flares are going up over the destroyed city, and he's like running through the streets. I thought that was pretty cool. But I fundamentally kind of agree with you guys that it is a technical movie over anything else, really. It's just like a technical showpiece for Mendez and Deakins. And
the one thing I do want to say for it is I actually kind of compare it favorably to a movie like Eraserhead, where I think like very personal movie to Sam Mendes, in the same way that I think Eraserhead was personal to David Lynch.
Mm-hmm.
And I think kind of the difference is that it was made very marketable. Like, I think you could bring this to just about anyone. Like, my mom's not a war movie person, but I think she would watch this movie and enjoy it enough because, you know, it's like there's not like any like gratuitous gore or, you know, it's not about, it's a war movie, but it's not about fighting per se.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's very accessible and, I think with the dedication and stuff, I think this is a very particular movie to Sam Mendes.
Yeah, you could tell that he was extremely passionate about getting this project done. And good on him for highlighting a war that is not often highlighted. And, well, you know, one of the things I take away from watching this is, like, you know, God bless that people served in World War II. But man, I really feel bad for the people who served in World War I. Like, with the damn bayonet, like having to poke somebody to death 3 feet away from you. God damn, and dealing with mustard gas, and it's like a lot of the chemical weapons hadn't been outlawed yet. And you've got guys on horses with bayonets, and you've also got tanks and airplanes. Like, what a fucking nightmare.
And how much technology that he mentioned that on the commentary, like the war started with people on horses. Mm-hmm. And by the end, they had fucking tanks and shit that wasn't even, like, made mm-hmm. yet. Insane.
Well, and go into the costuming. Like, the helmets that the British soldiers are wearing, you know, it almost reminds you of, like, a pikeman's helmet from medieval times, right? Like, from the late Renaissance when people had those circular kind of helmets on. It's like the helmet technology hadn't evolved that much. And what I was thinking when I saw those helmets was, like, God, you know, we're really not that far away from dozens of soldiers lined up with, you know, melee weapons and just charging at each other and going at it medieval style, you know, like and this was our first, like, this was the beginning of a new world and a new kind of fighting, where we were pretty soon, I mean, not too long after this, have weapons that were capable of just destroying the entire world. I mean, we went from having bayonets and horses to weapons of mass destruction within a generation or two.
Just like a historical anecdote that I got to teach last year that I actually really like. The introduction of steel helmets into World War One is a classic example of confirmation bias. So, like, most army, like, I think the British Army was actually the last army or last major army in World War One to give steel helmets out. But in the French Army, there was this relatively high-ranking general who was just totally against giving out steel helmets. He didn't think that they worked. He thought they were going to be a waste of resources, you know, like, better put that steel into making more guns or making more artillery shells or whatever. And so, rather than rolling it out to, like, the whole army at once, they, you know, gave it to, like, one division, and then compared it to, like, another division that was just down the line from them. And, you know, and then they went over the casualty paperwork, and he was like, aha, you know, the number of head injuries in the division that you gave the steel helmets to went up like 70%. Obviously, this is a failure. We shouldn't give out helmets. And Gideon, I'm going to call on you because I'm a teacher. What was missing?
What was missing?
Yeah.
With the helmet specifically?
Yeah, like, you know,
like the point on the top in the center?
No. How was this guy misreading the information?
Oh, it was just like one study, right? It was just the one, two different troops.
Well, so the issue is that he was so sure that the helmets didn't work, and he saw the spike in head injuries.
Mm-hmm.
But the problem is that most of those head injuries would have been death.
Oh, okay.
If they hadn't been wearing the helmet.
Okay, I see. Yeah. Wow.
I didn't know that. That's awesome. A good anecdote.
So yeah, show on that one.
No, absolutely. So, anybody got anything fun planned for this upcoming weekend or rest of the week?
I don't think so. I think I'm just chilling. More movies. Might watch Aliens. I still haven't seen that. I've really only seen Alien 1 twice and Romulus. And that's okay. It, I think.
Well, you know, Aliens is the fucking best.
Alien 1 twice and you've seen Aliens.
Right. Yeah.
It adds up.
Honestly.
No, I rewatched Alien over the summer and I used to think way better of it.
Mm-hmm.
And not that it's a bad movie, but no, Alien, in this case, the sequel is way better. Aliens is so much
better. Aliens is a lot better than Alien.
Interesting.
Yeah, I think the first Alien, even, like, I know people are like, oh, well, you know, it came out in the 70s. It's like, so you should have different standards as far as, like, I think Alien is slow and boring as fuck. And, like, nothing happens in that movie. But Aliens kicks ass. Neil and I used to, like, get into arguments all the time over what was it, dude? It was Aliens versus Terminator 2.
I think it was that you liked T2 and I liked T1.
Mm. Oh, okay. Well, never mind. But I've actually come around to you on that one, Neil. Yeah, I think I'm starting to kind of agree with you now that Terminator 1 is the superior movie. But anyway, that's a discussion for another time. I did see there's a new Terminator anime series on Netflix called Terminator Zero.
Nice.
Which looks totally awesome.
So it looks good. Okay.
Yeah. Have you seen any of the Terminators, Gideon?
That's what I was going to mention. I also haven't seen a lot of James Cameron stuff. I've seen both Avatars. I watched The Abyss for the first time earlier this year.
So you've seen all the worst James Cameron movies?
I haven't. Well, The Abyss is pretty cool.
Yeah.
Way of Water was dope in theater because it had the 3D glasses and they did the variable refresh rate. But anyways, I haven't seen Terminator 1 or 2. I think I saw like a later one, like Salvation or something with Christian Bale, like in 2009.
Dude, Terminator Salvation has the easiest platinum trophy ever on PS3. Just shout out to that. It's like 10 trophies, then you get a platinum.
Nice. I think I got that on 360. That
sounds
funny. I haven't seen a lot of the Alien movies. And I know James Cameron did Aliens. So
yeah.
I'm excited to go into that with spooky season right around the corner.
Yeah, Aliens is the shit. I would say it's probably the best James Cameron movie. But
okay. I'm stoked, yeah. Oh, and I haven't seen Predator. I've seen Prey, the newest one, that Hulu one.
The original.
Hmm?
You haven't seen the original Predator with Arnold?
No, I need to. I would love to.
I have never seen it either, Neil.
Gideon, maybe you should pick that for next.
I was thinking about it, yeah.
Yeah, whose turn is it, by the way? I forgot to, I wasn't even thinking about that. Because next week is Pentiment Act 3, and then the next week.
Yep, yeah. It is my pick next week. I wouldn't be opposed to doing Predator. I think that's what's kind of fun. I know we're getting way off topic on this 1917 one.
Yeah, that's
but,
all right.
Like, even with like what you guys were talking about, Alien, is like, that's a movie I'd heard about like my whole life. Like, my dad like saw it once and like scared the crap out of him. He's like hasn't gone back to it since, but he would always tell me about it growing up. But I only recently saw it literally for the first time like less than 5 years ago. So it's cool getting to experience all these like classic movies for the first time and almost not having that kind of super familiarity where it's like it doesn't hit as hard, I guess. So that's why even like, yeah, Predator, I'm sure I'd probably love. It'd probably be sick as fuck.
Yeah.
I mean, shit, let's do that. That's fine.
Let's just do Predator? Okay, cool.
Yeah.
Well, that's easy enough. I'm sure that's like a 90-minute just pure gasoline action movie.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm excited.
I'm always down for that.
There's some other ones I was thinking about, but not too sure yet. Have you guys seen Double Indemnity?
No.
It's like a black and white noir movie, Neil.
Oh, that was actually one other thing I wanted to compare 1917 to was an old Stanley Kubrick, Paths of Glory.
But, oh, yeah. Okay. I want to watch that too. I haven't seen that.
Kirk Douglas, right?
Highly recommend if you haven't seen it, but we don't have time to get into it now.
Okay. Yeah, well, maybe we'll do that for a future
episode. Take a look at what you really want to do between Predator or Double Indemnity. I would be super interested in either of those movies. So think it over and let us know.
Predator, we should get Xander on the podcast. I think he wrote part of his master's thesis incorporating Predator.
Oh, wow. Okay, shit. I mean, I'm down to do a special episode if we want to have him on. We could do Double Indemnity.
Now, and remember, Neil, you could totally catch up on Pentiment before next week if you really wanted to.
We need you, Neil.
If my computer works, I will buy Pentiment and try to get caught up.
Okay. Nice. It is. I finished it, so I know all the secrets that Gideon and the rest of the guys don't know yet, and I'm like itching to talk about this game. We've missed your insight because some characters are named after saints for reasons, and we don't know any of those reasons. We're like, why is this character named Magdalene? We're like, I don't know. I guess that has probably some significance to something. I don't know.
Yeah.
Clearly, I didn't pay enough attention in Sunday school, Neil. Does that make me a bad Catholic?
Yes. But I also didn't go to Sunday school. So,
Yeah, but you're good at like catching up on lore, right? And if there's one organization that has a lot of lore, it's the Catholic Church, right? So, so with that, we will kind of leave it out in the open for what is going to be the next movie. But we'll see you guys next week for Pentiment, and then for the final episode of Pentiment, and then in 2 weeks for either Double Indemnity or Predator. So, thanks, guys.
Hell yeah! Have a good one, guys.
Peace out,
buddy.
Later.